The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Mastermind, good afternoon. Man in Line's on now. Open line through to 1. You can text or WhatsApp on 166177. Email studio at manxradio.com or call 661368. The floor is yours. Whatever's on your mind. So what do you think about an electric fleet of buses on the Isle of Man, which may have to go elsewhere? The current bus depot at Bank Circus in Douglas isn't suitable for charging electric vehicles. So if the fleet goes electric, it might have to go somewhere else. That's what they're saying. It's a big site, of course, shoehorned in between Tesco and the Steam Railway. Any thoughts on this? We were talking last week. I've got lots of messages to get through. Alan dropped me a note to say the view that cannabis users may move on to higher, more harmful drugs will be negated if recreational cannabis use is made legal. This was Dr. Allinson was saying there should be some sort of citizens' jury or get together to approach the complex issue of this. So Alan said, if it's made legal, it will take users away from the very drug dealers who also sell hard drugs. Also, the feeling that modern cannabis may be stronger than previously is a misnomer. Whiskey is stronger than beer, so you drink smaller quantities. You can't ever overdose on cannabis, so the strength of the plant is not a problem. Well, Alan, you actually can overdose in terms of consuming more cannabis than your body can comfortably handle. I mean, it will take a real effort, but I mean, if you chain smoke, it will happen. Medical professionals refer to this as acute cannabis intoxication, often called greening out. Now, symptoms include extreme anxiety, paranoia, rapid heart rate, nausea, and in severe cases, temporary psychosis or hallucinations. Now, obviously, these effects are distressing. They're not life-threatening on their own, though they can lead to accidental injury due to impaired coordination or judgment. So you can get acute cannabis intoxication. So this was the thought last week about if recreational cannabis for recreational use, smoking, were made legal, that well, the question posed was, what would happen? Where do you think the criminals are going to go if cannabis is sold in packets behind the shelves in wherever they sell cigarettes now? Do you really think that the criminals will say, well, that's it, we've had a good run, never mind, it's okay? Or do you think they'll just look for people who smoke pre-packed cannabis cigarettes and say, well, we can do it cheaper than that and better? Come on. Criminals are crafty people, clever people, intelligent people, misguided, but they are intelligent people. Do you think they'd just pack up their tents and go away if recreational cannabis were sold legitimately? The very criminals that would also lead people to go to harder drugs. I mean, if you genuinely have got a reason to tell me why criminals would abandon selling cannabis, I'd love to hear it. Oh, by the way, Beach Buddies want to say thank you to the two people who tackled a fire in a Beach Buddies bin at Port Sodrick on Monday, on Bank Holiday Monday. They were David Cavendish, Mark's dad, and Robbie Bredner, who alerted the fire brigade and carried bags of water from the stream to put it out, stop it getting out of control. The fire brigade got there really quickly and said there was minimal damage. And they were fortunate to wear Beach Buddies. It was a steel bin, one of the original steel bins, and not one of the newer plastic ones, which could have been really badly damaged. So Beach Buddies would like to say If you're having a barbecue, please make sure to dispose of your barbecue properly afterwards. Put the darn thing out. And Beach Buddies are on duty this Sunday, the 10th at Derby Haven. I would obviously love to see you at 10:30. And of course, you just pitch up and they provide absolutely everything. The litter pickers, they take it all away and do all that good stuff. So well done to Robbie and David for doing that. Here's Juan with us now. Hi, Juan.
Hey, how are you, Andy? It's a lovely summer's day. Summer's coming.
Isn't it gorgeous?
Absolutely. Look at that. I was. Did you go to the old Walden event on Sunday at Peel?
Sadly, no. I didn't. Didn't quite make it. Why did you go?
Yes, it was really good. I thought I'd see you there in your Viking outfit marauding on the promenade, but no, I didn't. That didn't happen. Or Chris Williams.
he went. He was dressed as a Viking damsel.
In distress. Yeah, no, good event. Got to say, John Shakespeare and the team, absolutely fantastic event. You know, historical and cultural and everything. No, very well done. ELS with the sound system, totally really good. Noticed that Orsted were sponsoring that this year instead of the TT Village, so they must be more aligned to the Vikings coming and raping and pillaging places. Anyway, I see that the government are looking into the use of seaweed for fertiliser. Did you pick that one up,
Andy? Well, apparently it's all due to the Straits of Hormuz. It's all due to the Iranian situation that they've refocused on seaweed, which is amazing because they wouldn't touch it with a barge pole before.
Who would have ever thought of that? And I mean, I've been on here for 3 years now, and I asked Claire Barber about this and various things, and I've spoke about seaweed how many times, and now all of a sudden we have a crisis, and they decide they want to use it. Isn't that quite strange?
Well, I mean, obviously the cost of fertiliser has absolutely shot up, so I think we'll label this any port in a storm, shall we?
Well, the cost of fertiliser had gone up during the Ukraine crisis as well.
And COVID.
So they've had 5 years of it. So maybe a few years behind in doing it. But let's hope for some common sense maybe with that.
Well, it just depends whether the farmers want to do it. I mean, somebody's got to put it together. Somebody's got to get the stuff off the beach and take it where it's needed. So you just wonder, will this take a committee or will it be a consultant or what will it be?
Be another quango, won't it, Andy? Be another quango. Listening to the electric bus thing there before and Jeffrey Robinson talking about having a new bus terminal or depot. I think I remember when they done the signalling last time and they brought over the electric bus. I think the double decker, if I remember rightly, had to go to the power station to actually get charged properly because they couldn't charge it. So that's boding well, isn't it? I'm just looking at the leaflet that came through the door last week as well. Saying no to more vanning. So it's quite a extensive leaflet, not for Isle of Man, QR code and everything attached to it. So that's quite interesting. But I was just picking up on also this week the Australian one, which was the Golden Plains wind farm. $4 billion Australian wind farm with now an asbestos scandal. So the testing is positive, units being quarantined. Danish manufacturer, and the stuff is made in China, now launching a global check on all supply chains. So that's quite interesting. Now, the first generation wind turbines are coming to the end of life, which is around about 15 years. Which again is interesting with the subventions they've got, us how this actually stands on its feet as a business. But yeah. The industry there is saying, sold as a clean industry, but leaving mountains of toxic waste behind.
I actually got an email in from, it was a message dropped in actually from Gordon, who was talking about, because I think he had Orsted saying that when it's all over, if this wind farm off the East Coast happens, when it's all over, when it's decommissioned, they will take care of the concrete bases and take them away. Gordon worked in marine, I think he worked on the oil rigs, and he said concrete gets harder when it's underwater.
Absolutely.
It takes ages to go off. And he just wonders whether or not Orsted are going to put a bond in place for whenever the wind farm matures and it's decommissioned, so that somebody somewhere has got enough money to take these 87 big lumps of concrete away from the seabed. And you just wonder, I mean, Ørsted say they're going to do it, but you know me, I'm a practical person. How, when, and who's going to pay for it?
And on top of that, Andy, I mean, I know Julian's discussed the shares in Ørsted and how it's been going off the end of the cliff. If a company went bankrupt and was sold to another company, how strong would that bond be anyway?
Well, by bond, Julian, I mean a lump of money. I mean, suddenly to say, let's just say, for example, I don't know what it is, but if it costs £2 million to decommission a big lump of concrete under the sea, if there are 87 of them, is somebody going to put 190-odd million pounds into a bond, you know, an interest-bearing bond that will mature and then pay for the decommissioning of that concrete? Or are we waiting for it to happen? That's the point.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of ifs and buts and maybes there. And like you say, if a company goes bankrupt, what happens to the bond and the legalities after that? At the moment, I don't fully trust the Alaman government's negotiators to be very good at what they're doing at the moment.
Well, I think that's the point. That's the point that, you know, if it's the same people who negotiated the Liverpool landing stage, and the same people who are making sure we've got enough air traffic controllers, then, you know, people are rightly going to be concerned about this, Ewan.
Absolutely. And you know, over the next couple of weeks, I've got a lot of points to bring up on this. Obviously, I've been off for a few weeks, but I'm back on strength now. But you look at the £3 million consultation fees that they've just announced that they've had on the wind farm up to now. £3 million on consultation without anything being done so far of taxpayers' money. And you asked me some time ago whether it was worth spending £3 million on going and exploring for geothermal, which would give us endless proper green energy on the island. So £3 million's been spent there on turbines, which we know are not effective and looks like they can't stand on their own 2 feet without subvention. So I would suggest that maybe they still look at going down a geothermal route. If that worked, Andy, this island would absolutely turn around. It would be so self-sustainable with its own water supply, with power supply. We could be a fantastic farming island, agriculture, everything. Just if that happened, and it's an if, but you know what? If we don't drill that hole and explore for it will always ever be an if.
Mm. Well, OK. All right, Joan, good to hear from you. Thanks for being with
us. Take care, Andy.
All right, good to hear from you. Terry said, do you believe the war on drugs? Medical cannabis is half the price of street weed, apparently. People look for it, not the pushers hunting down poor innocent people. The Alaman policy artificially raises the price. The industry of police, lawyers and Department of Home Affairs needs the outdated laws to keep in business. That's Terry's opinion on drugs. So could you tell me, where will the criminals go if we get legalised recreational cannabis? It's a genuine question. I'd love to know. Too many people in our community are taking cannabis who are unable to work due to mental health problems, says Marie on 785. If we have to spend more money on electric buses, put the charging point at the unused park and ride car park next to the power station at Paul Rose. It's not far to get a power source and could save millions. Andrew said, don't you find it ironic that the MHKs who want assisted dying will refuse to allow capital punishment? They argue that the practice is inherently flawed because of the risk of killing an innocent person. But they're not so open to the flaws in the assisted dying bill, the necessary safeguards against coercion and protections compliant with the European Convention on Human Rights, which must be written into the bill, not just pledged. Why were they not in the bill to begin with? It shows how poor the MHKs who rushed this through are. That's Andrew on 384. Thanks to Alison, who said, you were talking about the towed caravan permit scheme a couple of weeks ago. I'd be interested to know how many people have actually done it. If you want to bring a caravan to the Isle of Man, you must have a permit, a towed caravan permit, allowing them to tow it on roads under the towed caravan permit scheme. This scheme applies to visitors and residents with a criteria set out. If you're a visitor, to get a permit, you must have a return ferry booking for the caravan within 12 weeks of arrival, and you'll need evidence, and you must be staying at an approved campsite. This is very appropriate because of TT on the way. If you're a resident of the Isle of Man, you are unable to import a caravan onto the Isle of Man on a permanent basis. But if you own a caravan that's already based on the island, you may leave and return with it to enable a period of travel elsewhere. Under the circumstances, a caravan may also be replaced while you're off island. So you can take an old one away, renew it and come back. It's a bit like Trigger's Brush, isn't it? Anyway, Ali, that's just to clear that up. Thanks, Ali. Well, let's get back to this thing about the buses. If the Isle of Man's bus fleet goes electric, it might have to move. It might have to leave Bank Circus. The Infrastructure Minister and Deputy Chief Officer of Infrastructure have both been giving evidence to a Tim Wall committee. Tim Crookall, MHK, is the minister, and the Deputy Chief Officer is Geoffrey Robinson, and they face some questions from the Environment Infrastructure Policy Review Committee.
The electric side of that is not there yet, I don't think, for a lot of our wagons and things. Cars, absolutely. Buses is heading down that way. I don't think it'll be too long before you see an electric bus here full time.
Even at the depots, we have to work closely hand in hand with the NUA, because the power infrastructure in that area, it just may not be suitable and cost an awful lot of money to upgrade in order to get the charging facility we need.
Do you have a handle on which depots you can do that to yet? Or
we have some ideas. So probably the best example I can think of is, we know the bus depot is not particularly suitable to move over to electrical vehicles. So we are looking at where we might be able to do that in an alternative location that would be suitable, so we can bring in both new fuels as transition, but also start moving perhaps to electrical buses, where most of the industry seems to be going at the moment.
If, let's use an example, that the best place to charge buses is in the current bus depot, but it's not the best place because of the infrastructure. Do you have an idea of whether it's an investment thing or it's just not possible?
It's more economic, more than likely, to go elsewhere. Okay. So getting the electrical infrastructure at that location is not easy and is expensive, and also the size of the site isn't big enough. So having to set up to charge vehicles every night will increase the size of the site.
If we had to move, at least Bank Circus, where the buses are, is right in the middle of town, and that's prime site for development later on, so there's some money to come back there if you like. We're talking years away probably with the electric buses.
There we are, Tim Crookall and Geoff Robinson talking to that committee about what might happen if we get electric buses, and apparently one's on the way. They were talking to Rob Mercer and Diane Kelsey of the Environment Infrastructure Policy Review Committee. We found out, by the way, about decommissioning offshore wind farms. If the offshore wind farms eventually built in Manx Water, or Stead, or anybody else, any future operator would normally be legally responsible for decommissioning them at the end of their life. Under UK and international offshore rules, developers must usually submit a formal decommissioning plan before construction even begins, including how turbines, cables and foundations will be removed or made safe. How do you make a lump of concrete safe? Anyway, concrete used underwater does harden and can last for decades. But that doesn't automatically mean it's going to be left behind forever. In some offshore wind projects, entire foundations have been removed during decommissioning, while others in parts of the structure have been left buried if the regulators decide removal would cause greater environmental damage than leaving them in place. And according to Ørsted's own decommissioning documents, we've checked, and offshore energy guidance, Ørsted is expected to fund and carry out the removal of it. How do you remove a big lump of concrete, though? Now, bearing in mind the piling that's going to have to take place to put big lumps of concrete like that there anyway, when you take it away, what do? Do you blow it up? Do you get an underwater jackhammer and get rid of it that way? How do you, if you know If you're expert, or indeed just have knowledge of how you get rid of underwater lumps of concrete, what do you do? If the government wants to build a new bus station, can I already put my contract bid in for £2 million? Says Barry. Oh, you never know, dear Barry. The outgoing government is saying the bus depot's too small, the port's too small, and the hospital's too small. An outgoing MHK is promoting drug use, supports increased welfare payments, and assisted dying. It's going to be interesting times on the doorstep in September. Oh, already, Gaz. Thank you. Why is there any discussion still going on about the wind farm, says Tim. Nobody wants it. That should be the end of it, says Tim. Well, the trouble is that we've obviously signed something somewhere with Ørsted, and we're in the planning at the moment. So, and the case is, as Bonzo pointed out yesterday, this could lead to untold riches for us. Well, it depends on the scale of untold. It could be minor riches, or it could be big riches. As yet, we don't know whether it's going to affect the price that we pay for electricity, how long it's going to be to get an interconnector here from Preston to Port Groudle Glen. We don't quite know. And the devil, as always, is in the detail. David said, Andy, Dr. Allinson's Citizens Committee looking at cannabis being made legal. Surely it's what we elect MHKs for. And Marty said, Dr. Allinson's trying to get the assisted dying bill through before he leaves Tynwald, and is also trying to legalise cannabis. Well, it's hard to argue, isn't it? I mean, Dr. Allinson is proposing this kind of citizens' jury, the citizens' committee, to see what he says is a complex and nuanced situation regarding the possible legalisation of recreational cannabis. Will it get rid of the criminals? Will it stop cannabis being a gateway drug to other things? Now, many people do stay on cannabis for their lives and don't go anywhere else. However, as always, the problem is at the fringes. The people who are either too young to understand or can't understand. The people on the fringes may fall prey to criminals. And by definition, people supplying drugs are criminals. Buying weed, buying cocaine, buying anything, you're not buying them from a licensed retailer. These are criminals. Oh, of course, they're the very end of the criminal chain. Further up the line, there are weasels and stoats and longtails and snakes. But they are criminals. And I don't think there's any getting away from that. So how do we get around that? Could you do that? The concrete bases are the least of our worries, says Mark. The plastic turbine blades are the real problem. To put seaweed on the ground will not make it a fertilizer. It makes it a soil conditioner. To turn seaweed into a fertilizer, you need to chemically treat it to release the nutrients so they can be used by the plant, says Sai. It requires a lot of heat, so it isn't used much until the price of fertilizer hits the sweet spot. So there we are. We'll see. So, Simon, how come that Manx tale of farmers years ago just taking it off the beach and putting it on the land? Was it a different type of fertilizer, or is that just Manx skeet? We have a perfectly usable bus depot and bus fleet. The DOI needs to concentrate on fixing the island's crumbling roads and infrastructure before even thinking about any grandiose electric fleet schemes, says James. I recently tried, says Mary, prescribed low-dose cannabis for my arthritis, and it didn't agree with me. It made me anxious. It made me ill. It shouldn't be allowed for everyone without doctor's guidance, says Mary. If Tesco, next door to Bank Circus, can provide 6 charging points for their delivery vehicles, it seems to me the area is the prime site for bus charging too. So are the DOI short-sighted, says Fritzy. What happens to the wind turbines if the company goes into liquidation? The Manx public will be left to foot the bill to remove the eyesore. Thank you, 572. We're assuming that our negotiating team we'll have that in the contract somewhere, so that you would assume that the people who are responsible for the wind turbine farm would be responsible for the decommissioning, and that if, heaven forbid, not saying it would happen, but if there were any financial problem and that company either got purchased or disappeared, that there would be funds left to do that. Now, as I say, perhaps a bond, perhaps left in escrow, so that neither party could touch it until they needed to be decommissioned, make it an interest-bearing bond, and surely that's one way to do it. Or do you know better? David's on now. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. And just for information, people, because they ask all the time, I'm producing 5 kilowatts of energy.
Good grief.
And my batteries are 92% full. But the question I was going to come on today was this negativity about wind turbines. You know, we've got to do something as an island, haven't we? We don't have any natural resources ourselves. What we've got to use technology which is available, which is either PV panels, loads of them. And that's why I encourage you to get the DEFA minister on to see where we are with the grant aid system to help citizens in the Isle of Man to get batteries or panels on the roof or whatever. And the Manx utility guy on, the chairman of that, Warrenburg, John, and say to him, well, what are you doing down that down the south of the island? Where are we? What's going to happen? How much electricity that's going to produce to the grid? And are we going to get any benefits? Because it's taxpayers' money that's going to fund it.
Well, Claire Barber, DEFA Minister, is on with Tim Cowsiller, Chief Officer, a week on Monday. Chief Minister's on next Monday, and a week on Monday, Claire. So I'll certainly ask her about it, because obviously the Green Living Grant came and went.
Yeah.
And that was really popular, and I think they didn't quite understand how popular it was going to be.
We need to move on, and as I said before, light bulbs, insulation and stuff like that. We've moved on nearly 10 years of technology since then. And they were still offering them ages ago. But she needs to encourage people to invest in their homes, future-proofing it for electricity. Myself, I would love to get another battery from my live electrical system like that here, which is producing energy. I'm 91%, so this afternoon I'll be well over 100. And what do I do with the surplus? I sell it back to the MEA at 9p. Mm. And that's what I want to ask John Warrenburg as well. So if the electricity is going up, is the rate going up that I'm giving you back to the national grid?
How long do your full batteries last with household use? With a full battery, how long can you run the house for?
I get overnight on that.
Right.
No problem at all. It's a question of regulating your system. Is regulating how many times you do washing, tumble drying. With the weather, it's nice now. It's washing's out on the line, so that's not going to count. That's not going to drain the battery. But if I had a couple of them, I'd probably last a few days.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Have you got an electric cooker?
No. Well, yes, I've got a. We've got a microwave, which is quick, and one of those air fryers and bits like that.
Right.
We don't do a lot of cooking now as much as Sunday roasts and stuff like that. But it survives. The battery still, even in the morning when I wake up, it's about 2% still left in the battery. So it's using energy overnight onto the house itself. So it's not costing me any. And my solar lights in the garden, when I wake up, even at late at night, they're still going like mad. You know, this government needs to get onto the tricks, don't they? And we need to get the benefit from it.
Well, I think also the government needs to show its colours. It needs to show its credentials.
Yeah.
If they want us to do it, they have to make it as easy as possible for us to do it.
Yeah. And the other thing about having a charging point for electric bus is, aren't they putting a big charger at the sea terminal and down at the airport?
Yeah, they're putting new ones in there, yeah.
Yeah, big sum. So all they've got to do, does it make any difference where the bus sits at night? It can sit at the sea terminal. Nobody uses it at night, do they? Except in the summer, I suppose. But at the airport, they can store them down there.
Okay.
If you're getting the energy into the system and it's going into the buses and whatever. And the other thing I'm going to throw in this spanner too is whatever happened to what we call the cabbage, you know, the train.
Oh, yes, the train.
Because it was a great idea having a diesel shunter, and it was universal because you could drive it. It had steering at one end, and then if you wanted to go the other way, you just went to the other cab at the other end of the their train, and you, away you went. But we're not using it. Is it becoming a museum item, or can't we actually sell it?
All right. Well, we'll find that.
It's
where is the cabbage? Does anybody know where the cabbage is?
Yeah, and it's a good job Wilf is not listening in, because he'd say to you, I'll give you 60 quid for that scrap.
Apparently, right, I was at the funeral, somebody said, with Wilf, it was always £75. That was it. Or if it was a bad week, it was £50.
Yeah. Well, I remember, and they're all gone now, when I used to bring in scrap copper or lead or whatever like that. I was always told in the early days from an older plumber, he said, if you're putting your scrap in, it's copper or lead, he said, never put it on the edge of the scales. Always get it in the middle. And I looked at some people that were scrap dealers and whatever, and sure enough, they were actually trying to put them on the edge so the scale wouldn't weigh so heavy. All right.
Thanks for calling.
Ta-ra, boy.
Cheers. It's 25 to 1, and David reminded me when he mentioned Wilf Young. Wilf would have been 82 last Monday, May the 4th, Star Wars Day. I was at Wilf's funeral last week, and very well attended if you were there. So let's remember Wilf Young, who would have been 82. The late Wilfred George Young would have been 82 last Monday, May the 4th.
Ramsey Care Products is now opened in St. Paul's Square, Ramsey. An Aladdin's cave of stock, including mobility scooters, Rise recliners, household aids and more. Call 627-177 to find out more. Ramsey Care Products, affordable mobility solutions for you.
Join us on Saturday the 9th of May at the Mountain View Innovation Centre as we celebrate the opening of the new Financial Options and Chase Wealth Solutions office in Ramsey. You can now access expert financial and mortgage advice closer to home. No need to travel to Douglas. Come along, meet the team, have a chat and book an appointment at a time that suits you. There's plenty of parking and we'd love to see you there. That's Financial Options and Chase Wealth Solutions, Saturday the 9th of May, 10 till 3 at the Mountain View Innovation Centre in Ramsey. Chase Financial Services Limited, trading as Financial Options and Chase Wealth Solutions, is regulated by the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority.
A great night's sleep got even better with Zed's Bedding Store. From quality Beldorm bed linen and mattress protectors, fleece and woven throws, to luxury duvets from the fine bedding company, Zed's Bedding Ramsey, next to Isle of Man Bank.
Elevate Rubber Cover from Rubber Roof Shop for one-piece flat roofing systems. No joins, no leaks. We also line commercial box gutters in one piece up to 60 metres with a 20-year written warranty against leakage. Call Rubber Roof Shop on 49667.
Have your say. Further meetings and hearings for the Moher Vanin offshore wind farm application will take place from the 11th to the 14th of May. Letters of invitation have been sent by the independent examining body to the principal stakeholders in the application. Register at least 1 week in advance to secure your place. To read the letter and for more details, visit the Moher Vanin project page at mima.gov.im. It's time to have your say.
Weekend or weekend, you're tuned to the Sunday Chill Out Show with Chris Pearson on Manx Radio. It's all
about love. Join me Sunday evenings from 7 for 2 hours of the most chilled out and relaxing new and classic tracks on Manx Radio's Sunday Chill Out Show. Why did I even bother? There'll never be you and
I. Kick back, relax, and chill. Chris Pearson on the Manx Radio Chill Out Show.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
22 minutes before 1. What happens? Text to 572 to the wind turbines in our waters. If the company goes into liquidation, the Manx public will be left to foot the bill to remove the ISO. That's 572. Well, we checked. Orsted's Moher Vanin Timwell submission. Offshore wind companies are normally required to set aside money in advance to pay for removing turbines and foundations at the end of a project's life. We don't quite know how long it's going to last, do we? Have they said 30 years, 40 years, 50 years? How long is it going to last? And in that time, how often do they think the blades are going to need replacing? UK offshore law is designed so the developer, not taxpayers, carries the cost, even if the operating company later fails. So the developer for the proposed Morvanin project also says the Manx company is backed by its larger Danish parent company. So it's a Manx company backed by a Danish one. However, because no wind farm has yet been approved in Manx waters, the exact financial guarantees and legal protections would still need to be agreed by the Isle of Man government before any construction could begin. And also a message in from Emma, who just said, yes, I understand all this, what you're saying. Thank you, Emma. But this is, how about this? I think Emma's an advocate. This is cross-jurisdictional. This is a UK wind farm that's going to be in Manx waters. So Ørsted will be getting its subsidies, presumably from the UK government, what they call CFDs, contracts for difference, i.e. they still get paid when the wind don't blow. How does that sit, I wonder? And also, are they paying for the interconnector to come from England to Groudle Glen? Will they be paying for it, or do we have to pay for it? Well, lots more questions. Offshore wind turbine foundations are usually removed using, or somebody's found out then, heavy lifting ships, underwater cutting equipment, and specialist divers or remotely operated robots. The exact method depends on the type of foundation and how deep it sits in the seabed. For large concrete gravity bases, which sit on the seabed under their own weight, engineers can sometimes break the structure apart underwater using hydraulic breakers, diamond wire saws, or controlled cutting systems. Then they lift the sections onto barges for disposal or recycling. In some cases, the surrounding seabed material is dredged away first to expose the base. Steel monopiles are usually often cut several metres below the seabed using abrasive water jets or giant circular saws before being lifted out by crane vessels. Industry guidance says that regulators may allow parts buried deep below the seabed to remain if removing them would damage marine habitats more than leaving them in place. I'll be honest with you, everything that's mentioned there would probably damage the marine habitat. According to the offshore decommissioning guidance used in UK waters, developers are expected to pay for the work and restore the seabed as far as reasonably possible after removal. We have a perfectly usable, James, this is a perfectly usable depot and bus fleet. Again, the DOI needs to concentrate on fixing our roads and infrastructure, possibly the prom. I see. I recently tried low-dose cannabis. This is Mary again with this. And thank you for that. Just a quick word about Alfred Cannon. The Chief Minister's on Man in Line next Monday, the 11th. Next Thursday, a week tomorrow, Nick Kay is in. Nick the Pharmacist will be on. And then a week on Monday, the 18th, Claire Barber's on, the DEFA Minister. So if you've got any questions for any of them. In the meantime, you can send them in. You can text or email, whatever you want to do. Call the answer phone on 682631. Why can't we, the Isle of Man, set the price that Ørsted have to pay, also the maximum height of the turbines, says Andy. Well, I think it's because it's their project. It's like when you go to planning. You have to design what you think you want, and then you go to planning, and then they approve it or not. So it's not our project, it's their project. Did David say he has such low electrical usage to manage his solar supply? His payback period on investment must be decades. Hope David's storage battery wasn't supplied by one of the three UK companies who've gone bust and no longer offer spares and repairs. It does take years. I mean, it's long thousands, isn't it, solar panels and batteries? But it is, and what estate agents will tell you is, you just put the price on your house when you sell it. So if you're selling a house, it will have cost you nothing more. If the wind farm only lasts 15 to 20 years, what is going to replace it? Says Texter 144. Yeah, we don't know the period, what the life is, the effective life, commercial life, of this proposed wind farm is. But most wind farms are designed to operate for at least 25 years. Many are now being planned for 30 to 35 years with maintenance and upgrades. According to Ørsted, and you can check it from Ørsted.com, when a wind farm reaches the end of its life, there are usually three options. Number one, extend its life. Replace older turbines with newer technology known as repowering, or decommission and remove it altogether. For the proposed Moor Vanin project, Ørsted's publicly referred to an operational lifespan of 35 years. If the project eventually stopped operating after that period, the decision on what replaces it would depend on future energy policy, technology, economics, and whatever consent conditions were agreed at the time. So, 35 years, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Visit Ramsey Art Gallery for a fabulous range of top brand watches and stunning gold and silver jewellery, gifts for all occasions, and of course our gallery of prints and original artworks. Find all this and more at Ramsey Art Gallery Jewellers and Engravers opposite the RNLI shop.
Ambitions Recruitment Consultants, covering all business sectors in the Isle of Man. Register online or email your CV to info@ambitions.co.im or ring 614 841. Ambitions, for all your recruitment needs, however big or small.
Corkhill Storage, Corkhill Storage. Call Corkhill Removals and Storage today. We'll store your goods day after day. Safe and secure around the clock. When it comes to storage, we do the lot. Visit CorkhillRemovals.com.
At Bagode Cattery, we've been caring for animals for over 50 years. As a cattery, we care for our customers' cats and treat them as our own. Visit Bagode.com or call 321 989.
Road racing returns to the island, and Manx Radio Motorsport is an essential part of it. As the official TT Broadcast Media partner, our live coverage brings every qualifying and race session to the island and the world on air and online. So with airtime, sponsorship and digital advertising options, it's officially your best chance to reach a global motorsports audience. Contact our sales team now on 682 620 or at sales@manxradio.com. Manx Radio Motorsport, the best biking station in the world.
Hello, I'm BethEsby.com, Manx Radio's head of biker podcasts. In this general election year, Manx Radio will have an almost interminable number of programmes in the run-up to the big day when you can choose who to bin off. And for the first time, we're also hosting a live show aimed at helping all those tens of young and first-time voters, or those who've just forgotten, through the complex issue of voting. That is, confirming your name and address, stepping into a cubicle, and putting an X next to the name of someone you think isn't going to be completely useless. So join us at IM1 Voting for Dummies, live at the Peel Centenary Centre from 7:30pm on the 16th of May. Tickets available online at centenarycentre.com, from Celtic Gold in Peel or OMA in Ramsey. Voting for Dummies, laughing in the face of democracy.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Does anybody know where the cabbage is? It will be lovely to know. It's, oh crikey, how long ago is it? It must be going on 15 years since the cabbage was delivered to the steam railway. Diesel number 21 was delivered, I think, December 2013. £420,000 they paid for it. It was supposed to pull commuter, dining and maintenance trains and act as a shunter and a recovery loco as well. But it was Ray Harmer, I think, was infrastructure minister. But it's not really happened, has it? So where is it? And then, does anybody know what's happened to the cabbage? It will be lovely to know. I don't know what side you're on, but let me tell you, more than 90% of us on the Isle of Man don't want these windmills. We don't want them. End of Gary and Ramsay. Well, it doesn't, my opinion's neither here nor there, Gary. I'm just trying to put as much information out as possible. And remember, at the moment, this is this is a project that's going through. They're not writing this down on the back of a fag packet. There are billions and billions. And again, this is a revenue stream for us. That's what the government sees it as. Money that we need. And obviously, they've decided this, that we obviously had the chance of going for that gas that's off Mackled. But that didn't happen. And won't happen now if there's going to be a wind farm there. We don't know how heavy the electric buses are. What about the damage to road? I hear, the more I hear about the wind farms, the more sceptical I become. If it's for 35 years, I most probably won't be here, but my children and grandchildren will be, so I'm concerned for them. No need for electric buses. I was in Liverpool at the weekend. No sign of fancy Merc buses. In fact, some quite old ones and still running very well, says Kev. I know, but think of our carbon footprint. If the potential wind farm decommissioning issues may hit 30 to 35 years, perhaps nobody over, say, 35 years of age should be making the decisions. So it should be young people only, yes. Perhaps only young people to pay tax as well. That'd be a good idea, wouldn't it?
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
The train is on block at Bank Circus, says Texter 844. It was in one of the workshops at Douglas Railway Station, says 535. And Tim Crookall bought the cabbage. I don't think he did, 598. I think you're... Anyway, so where is it? Somebody send a photo, please. The cabbage. What was the... I mean, is anybody doing anything with the cabbage? It's a big hunk of metal, and we paid a lot for it. I have an idea. Why doesn't Ørsted stick these windmills down off Cornwall and the south coast to see if they get planning for them there? Well, that's your idea. However, we're here and we're now. We can't erase what's happened. This is what's happened, and this is the situation we find ourselves in. So we have to address exactly what the situation is. And it hasn't, at the moment, it's a consultancy period. And if you want to go and take part in it, I'm sure they'll be happy to see you. Arbury Castletown and Maloo MHK, Jason Morehouse, tabled a Timwell motion calling for a reset of the energy balance. He says we need to reassess the role of renewable energy and not pursue it at any cost. It comes after a local authority criticised the lack of information available about Caer Vi wind farm at Eerie Stain. It's believed an application for the project is imminent. So, and again, this is the onshore wind farm that is proposed for the south, Eerie Stain proposed for the south, which of course I think is in Mr. Morehouse's constituency. So exactly what does Jason Morehouse think about all this?
It's quite possible on the morning before this is debated that the MUA will put in the planning application, Mr. President will go, and it will impact on some speeches, but ultimately there is a chance that this can be debated before that planning application goes in. But it's looking at the wider implication in terms of the energy balance. It's looking at the fundamentals in terms of the cost and the communities and ensuring it's done in an effective way. Because at the moment, I have concerns that the on-island projects are becoming excessively expensive, but the justification is over and over again that it's based on a Tinwell decision.
From the wording of the motion, are you actually opposed to the plans as they stand?
In terms of the MUA, they've actually looked at a range of possibilities. They've looked at solar. They've looked at a variety of locations where turbines could be. They've had some conversation with private businesses, private individuals. So the overall package is an interesting one. In terms of the headline news, in terms of the proposal that's being focused on, that's something I do have concerns with. But I don't want to kind of become a one-trick pony in terms of... when this motion becomes debated, everyone sits there with their hands over their mouth going, but we can't say anything. This is about an issue that we have decided as a body that we can't discuss because it's in planning. It's quite crazy.
Jason Morehouse and his opinion of where we are. Any thoughts on what Mr. Morehouse has to say? No doubt he'll be... I don't know whether Jason Morehouse is standing this year, so we'll see. But anyway, Jason Morehouse is talking common sense, says Liz on 194. The cabbage is in the far corner of the bus yard at Bank Circus, says Will. Thank you, Will. This is the ad from the other day, but it changes the names of cars and garages every day, Ocean, but it also mentions Milcrease's, even though they're not there anymore. This is the advert that was going around about the mis-selling of car finance. Have you followed this up at all? If you bought a vehicle on finance and you've seen one of these adverts, is it a UK company and are they approaching it from the UK end? Apparently it was Mr. Longworth, the man who was in charge, who wanted the cabbage, says Garth. And more to the point, is the funfair coming over for the TT so I can start saving up for some overpriced candy floss? Says Belly the Plumber. How much is candy floss going to be this year? Goes up and down, doesn't it? Like there's an international market in candy floss. Howard's on us with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Andy. Just a quick one. You mentioned the cabbage. There's also another one sitting down there, and yeah. I know they started doing some work on them. The County Donegal rail cars they brought in.
Oh, right.
Many years ago, they were a pair of diesel cars, and they were going to run them on the Peel Line. That's how long ago it was.
Right. When was that? Was that the 70s?
Oh, well, yeah, well into that.
Were they maroon and cream, weren't they?
That's right, what they call blood and custard. And they were, when, what's the name, the chap that's just left, Longworth. Longworth. He was, or they were, in the process of renovating them. Now, how far has that continued as the DOI? Have they stopped it or otherwise? Because they were perfectly feasible and they would run as a twin pair. They were going to run them as singles, but they found there was no reverse gear and they'd sold the turntable in St. John's. So that put the kibosh on that. But they're still here and they're about somewhere.
Well, there we are. We're looking for the County Donegal rail cars, the cabbage we've found.
There's all these things that are sitting around that they could, they all have potential, even if it's only for heritage work.
Good, yeah, good point. All right, thanks, Howard.
Thanks, then. Bye.
Introducing legal, thank you, Keith in Onken. Introducing legal cannabis is an extremely good idea for most of us, as the tax revenue raise could be significant. People would also pay tobacco duty, which would increase government income. Good point, Keith. I like your thinking. However, how much? At the moment, cigarettes are what? 18, 17, 18 pounds a packet. Can you believe that? £18 for a packet of fags these days, nearly a pound per cigarette. The vast majority of it goes in duty and tax and VAT. So how much would cannabis cigarettes be? And again, my point is, how do you know that the criminal fraternity simply won't just undercut them? What do you do? Or maybe they'll make fake ones. We don't know. And I think if we're going to go this way, we need to know more. Big Phil said, anybody who thinks the drug cartels in Liverpool are going to close up shop if cannabis is legalised is living in a fantasy world. Penalties for possession of drugs should be increased dramatically. The trouble is, Phil, the prison's full already. Have Orsted completed a survey into the effects of turbine installations on seals, dolphins, basking sharks and other marine life around our shores? Surely the construction and operation will disturb them for years if they are built. Well, it won't make no difference. How much difference? Well, we don't know. It'd be nice to hear from some of the wildlife organisations off the Isle of Man to see what their thoughts are. Well, anyway, that's it. Back tomorrow with another Open Line. Thanks to Chris on the phone. Remember, Chief Minister Alfred Cannon on next Monday, the 11th. W-I-N-T.